The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, is this the end of lockdowns in a state that has had some of the strictest COVID mandates in the country?
That is the most reasonable approach to the current status that we are in.
Also, as elections officials across the country continue to face attacks from the fringes, would nonpartisan leaders be best suited for those roles?
If there's one place that the parties don't belong, it's in this particular seat.
We speak with Julie Anderson, who's running for Washington's Secretary of State without the backing of a major political party.
There have got to be people out there that are wanting to invest in what I would call is a movement.
Plus, for the past few years, Seattle simply has not been able to stay out of the headlines, and not for good reasons. Well, now there's a new mayor and a possibility for a new beginning.
Seattle will be thriving.
I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you so much for listening to the Undivided Podcast. I'm coming to you today from the free state of Florida. Very excited to be out of the winter weather and on the sunny beaches. I'm going to be reporting back to you Monday on the podcast about just how different life here in Florida is as it pertains to COVID and restrictions than it is back home in Washington State, which, as you know, has been one of the strictest states in the country as it pertains to COVID mandates. But is that about to change? Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who has taken some extreme measures when it comes to COVID, measures like vaccine mandates that led to the firing of a ton of state workers. We had some of the longest lasting and strictest lockdowns in the country. Well, Governor Jay Inslee earlier this week briefed the public on the state's response to the Omicron variant. He talked about things that are pretty non-controversial. He talked about expanding at-home testing.
Our Department of Health has procured and has on very short-term expectations of delivery 5.5 million additional rapid tests to be available to Washingtonians in a variety of ways.
He also talked about his desire that schools remain open.
It is our firm and stalwart expectation that we will keep our schools open.
Again, those are some things that to me are pretty non-controversial. We all want kids learning in the classroom. And honestly, I wouldn't mind having one or two COVID tests sitting in my medicine cabinet in case I need to take one really quick. What the governor did not announce, which some had feared at this press conference, he did not announce any new lockdowns or additional restrictions as it pertains to the spread of Omicron. I have to admit, I was a little bit surprised, but the governor also had a moment that I think is one of the most promising moments, if you're a resident of Washington State, as it pertained to how the handling of the pandemic is going to look moving forward. The governor was asked this by Austin Jenkins, who's a member of the Olympia Press Corps.
Governor, just a question about why you don't feel the need right now to press the pause button on any of what might be considered higher risk activities or gatherings in the state.
So essentially, Austin is asking, are you going to do additional lockdowns? Why aren't you, given the spread of the Omicron variant, given the fact that hospitals are a little taxed at the moment? How the governor responded, I like it. I like it a lot. Here is the governor's response to Austin Jenkins.
That's a very important question. I'm glad you asked that. We believe that there is because of the nature of this virus and our increasing tools that are now available to us and our increasing understanding of its science, we believe it is a reasonable thing to do to use these tools that are now available to us, and that is the most reasonable approach to the current status that we are in. We now have vaccines that are available to dramatically reduce the risk of serious illness and death. Secondly, we have a variant that, although is extremely contagious, all the evidence suggests it is probably significantly less risky as a percentage of infections that end up in hospitalization or death. That is something we take into consideration. Third, we have multiple what I call common sense measures now available to us, including masks, which are now we've made broadly available to people free. We have rapid testing that is available. And we have scientific knowledge about the risk that people will make self-assessments about the risk environments that they have. And the people who have not been vaccinated have had plenty of opportunities to get vaccinated. You have had months and months and months. So if you have not availed yourself of that, you've made a decision to accept that risk. And unfortunately, we've lost too many of our citizens who made that decision.
The first thing I noticed in there is that what the governor said about people who aren't vaccinated yet is very similar to something Colorado Governor Jared Polis, a Democrat, said a few weeks ago.
If you haven't been vaccinated, that's your choice. I respect that, but it's your fault when you're in the hospital with COVID.
Now, I talked about Jared Polis's remarks here on the podcast and how I think that that is a perfectly reasonable way to look at where we're at this stage in the pandemic. And I would argue that there are a lot of people who don't have vaccines, who've chosen not to get them, who would agree, who would say, look, I'm not getting a vaccine. I don't care if we move on with things. I'm going to go out and live my life the way I want to live it. Certainly don't change your life just because I won't get a vaccine. So I think that's a promising development that the governor is now echoing what Jared Polis said. Another thing that's important from the governor's statement there is he is essentially saying that with the availability of vaccines, we have tools to avoid lockdowns and to avoid economic harm. And that tells me, at least, we won't see any other lockdowns in Washington state. Now, the governor could obviously change his mind, but if he's on record as having said that we have the tools to avoid that sort of thing, I don't see how that changes a few months down the road. I hope I'm right on that one. The other thing that I was really glad to hear the governor acknowledge is that, yes, Omicron is spreading around like crazy, but it is less serious. All of those things are good. As much as I know some people listening have really despised the way that Jay Inslee has handled the pandemic, this is a good moment. Those are good statements. Those are reasonable, above all. Those are reasonable statements. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or anywhere else on the spectrum, you should find those statements to be reasonable and refreshing from a governor who hasn't always used common sense and reason. And so I really hope that this is the beginning of the end, that we can move out of this period, at least in our state, of constantly being frantic and concerned about what the governor might do next. And, you know, I know there are people who are going to say, oh, the Democrats are going to start to ease up and declare victory because we're heading into the 2022 midterms. I'm sure they are. And you know what? Frankly, I don't care. If that is the genesis for Democrats, from Governor Inslee all the way up to the President of the United States, to slowly ease out of this pandemic, I could not care any less. I don't care what the rationale is for them to start looking at this more rationally. I just want them to do it. So again, by all means, if you want to ease up on the pandemic and ease out of restrictions and mandates because you want to win an election, have at it. Just know that we will see it for what it is. Okay, as you guys know, I am not a fan of the two major political parties. Like many of you listening, I don't fit into a little box that a big party made for me. I consider myself a moderate independent. And so I was really happy to see moderate independent. I want more independents to run for political office. I want more people to run outside of the two-party system. Here in Washington state, we've had Republican Secretary of States forever. And it's interesting because it's a Democratic state. All the other elected officials on the entire West Coast are Democrats except for our Secretary of State. Until recently, Kim Wyman, the Secretary of State, resigned about a month ago to take a job doing election security for the Biden administration. Now, this was a panic moment for Republicans in Washington state because this was the last office they held on to, and she just gave it up. And of course, Governor Jay Inslee got to select the temporary replacement, and he chose a Democrat. He chose a state senator named Steve Hobbs, who has no elections experience at all. But for whatever reason, Governor Inslee has made him the heir apparent of this office. Now, that doesn't mean that Steve Hobbs just gets the job. The next general election, so coming up in November of 2022, there is going to be an election for that position. Now, Steve Hobbs is going to run, but he's going to have some competition. And I was pleased to see that someone is running as a nonpartisan. So they're not running as a Democrat or Republican. Her name is Julie Anderson. She has been the Pierce County auditor for years. If you don't live in Washington State, Pierce County is just below King County, which is Seattle. So it's one, in one of the more populous parts of the state. And she has expressed vocally in recent years that she doesn't consider herself a member of either party. And she really believes that given all of the controversy around elections and the attacks on elections officials, that this office should really be nonpartisan. And I have to admit, it's hard to argue with that. You know, you've got a segment of the Republican Party that is so disillusioned with the voting process that they actually believe Donald Trump is supposed to be president right now. And I've had Republicans who have told me that they don't even want to vote because they don't believe, in Washington State, we do all mail-in voting, and we have for years. They don't believe that their ballot as they mark it is going to, that's what their vote is going to be on the back end. And that's a problem, right? And so you want people to have confidence in the voting system. You want people to vote. And you want people to be able to trust the outcomes of elections. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have some healthy skepticism about shortfalls in the system. But I do believe that having someone who's considered a nonpartisan in that position could be healthy and helpful. So I went down to Pierce County, sat down with Julie Anderson, and we had a conversation about how she plans to win without the help of a major political party.
This isn't something you've just stumbled upon, right? How, you've been saying for some time you don't consider yourself either a Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, for quite a while. And I pretty famously said to the News Tribune that if I ran for another office, I wouldn't run under a party banner. And that's the case today.
And you don't like to say independent, right?
Right.
Okay, why is that?
Because independent is an alternative political party, and nonpartisan means I don't belong to any group or political party. Nonpartisan for me is a set of values, not a group. So I'm unaffiliated with any group or PAC or party.
At the same time, doing this is very challenging. You know that. You've been in politics. You get the money, you get the power from the party.
Yes.
So how do you, as a nonpartisan, not affiliated with either major political party, how do you raise money? How do you do all the things that are required to win these days?
Hard work, friends and family is where I'm starting now. It's early days in the campaign. And I'm hoping that the more people that I talk to, the more word will spread. And there have got to be people out there that are wanting to invest in, I think, kind of what I would call is a movement. I think that they see that the Secretary of State's office is substantially different, that it's ministerial in nature, and that if there's one place that the parties don't belong, it's in this particular seat. And I think that I'll be able to attract major donors and organizations that believe the same thing and really would like to see Washington State be a trendsetter and have this trend spread to other states.
I heard some disappointment from Democrats and Republicans that you weren't selected to replace Kim Wyman when she left. Were you disappointed that the governor didn't select you to replace the Secretary of State?
Yeah, sure.
Why do you think he went with Steve Hobbs?
You know, that's an interview for the governor. All I know is I filed to unseat Mr. Hobbs, and I think that speaks for itself.
I spoke to Kim Wyman before she left. She and I sat down and did a lengthy interview, and she did give me some insight into the governor's thinking because she had a meeting with the governor and where she basically said, you know, I think you should put a nonpartisan in or someone who doesn't want the job. That was her suggestion, which obviously wouldn't be you, but the governor wanted someone who wanted to run. So Senator Hobbs is the governor's selection for Secretary of State. Is that a hard barrier to get around for you?
No, it's not. And I do think that Secretary Wyman gave the governor some very clear guidance that she thought that somebody with experience was best for the job, and that didn't happen.
Well, that's fascinating to me. He does not have any elections experience. I know that in addition to all the issues around elections, the issue of experience is going to be front and center. Kim Wyman told me she thought that he could do the job because of his military experience.
So here's the thing about election professionals, myself included. We are not going to torpedo or submarine anybody that's in that office. Our highest duty is to maintain confidence, and accuracy in elections, and undermining anybody in that office is not consistent with that mission.
So you're not going to barb Steve Hobbs?
Certainly not on this show. I can't wait for him to come out and take positions and give interviews so that I can learn a little bit more about him, because he doesn't have any practical experience in any of the divisions that are operated by the Secretary of State's office. I don't know where he stands on anything. I don't know what his acumen is. So I really can't wait for the legislative session to get started, for him to start campaigning, and to start being on record so I have something to react to. But what I will tell you, and what I want your audience to know, is that there are 39 election professionals in Washington State that are going to make sure that elections continue to be run with the highest integrity, accuracy, and security, regardless of what the political appointee in office does or doesn't do. And it's sustainable in the short term. He's only going to be in office for a short period of time, if I have anything to say about it. And there's very little, because of the infrastructure that we have built up, because of the tight network and professionalism of election professionals, there is very little harm that he can do in the short term.
The Secretary of State's office is odd. We're in a blue state, but for years, for some reason, you got the slate of candidates, all the Democrats win, and then a Republican wins the Secretary of State's office, which I've always found a little confounding. Why do you think that is?
Well, for the last 20 years, it's been Sam Reed and Kim Wyman, who were both professionals that had local hands-on experience where they earned trust and brought that trust into the state office and didn't break that trust and behaved in a nonpartisan fashion. So in spite of their party affiliation and their activism within their party, voters were able to overlook that because of their professional experience and because of the trust that they had built up and banked. So it's not surprising to me that Kim was reelected multiple times, as well as Mr. Reed.
The last year plus have been challenging for election officials across the country. There are people who are going to be watching this, Julie, who believe that Donald Trump won the election in 2020.
He didn't.
I was just going to ask. I knew the answer, but I had to ask anyway. There are people who believe that there was such widespread fraud in our state that Lauren Culp won the election.
He didn't.
I know. And so I'm glad to hear you say that as well. But these are people who have said that they don't even want to vote because they don't believe that their vote as written will be counted as written. How do you try to change the mind of someone who believes that?
There's several things that I'd like to break that apart. Yeah. First of all, for people that are leading the charge on those kind of theories of mistrust, who are amplifying those theories, I'd say, please sue us. Would you just hurry up and lay down the paper and go to court and sue us? Because we're not being provided with any evidence or any documentation. We're being provided with generalized concerns and the possibility of fraud rather than fraud. So we want things to react to actual evidence, names, records, something for us to sit down with those complainants and work through and explain. And if proven correct, my goodness, we want to pursue action, right? For other folks who are just have thrown their grappling hook into those campaigns, those are just regular everyday citizens who, thank goodness, are civically engaged and concerned and care. So kudos for them for being concerned and caring. But because they've just thrown a grappling hook into a theory without doing any kind of independent work on their own, I really want to hear from them and election administrators in all counties. Definitely, we want them to come take a tour. We want to sit down and have a conversation with them. That's remedy number one. I have not found any individual or organization that doesn't feel better after they've had a visit or a sit down with us. But those are the people who have good faith concerns, as opposed to folks who are promoting concerns to raise money or perhaps get attention or to gain their own notoriety. So we love giving tours. Another thing that I think election officials can do, and I look forward to doing in a leadership role in the Secretary of State's office, is expanding our audit trail, because it's not enough for people to hear, trust us, we see no evidence of fraud. I think that they want independent verification as much as possible. So increased and different types of audits, and it's going to be a bit of a challenge in a vote by mail state, which is paper based, where we don't have tabulation devices out in the field in polling places. But I look forward to exploring with the auditors and with stakeholders and with technology companies, having an attitude as an election administrator that that voters don't understand, trust us, we've got this, where's your evidence? Those are responses that just don't cut it anymore. So election administrators need to stretch, and we need to sit down and figure out what do we need to change. Now, the forensic audits that are being called for, the Maricopa style forensic audits, we can't just say, see, it didn't work. And we have rigorously rejected calls for a forensic audit in Washington State in all of our jurisdictions. We've all been asked to do that. Because you don't retroactively go back and audit a certified election. Audits are all about maintaining and establishing standards to audit to. So I'm open to having conversations with voters and stakeholders about what is missing in the current auditing systems that we have. And can we create systems to audit to in the future so that we're all playing by the same rules and expectations, and it's reasonable to audit to those standards? Totally open to that.
Again, that's my conversation with Julie Anderson, the current Pierce County auditor who is running for Secretary of State in Washington as a nonpartisan. You can watch more of my interview coming up Sunday on the Undivided Digital Show. You can watch that on YouTube. It's Undivided with Brandi Crews on YouTube. And also, if you want to watch full interviews, the only place you can do that is by becoming an Undivided subscriber, either on Patreon or on my locals community. Patreon.com/undivided or brandicruz.locals.com. A few more things that I want to touch on today. You know, Seattle's in a struggle fest lately, and it has been for some time. We've got a big drug crisis, low police staffing, homeless crisis out of control, tents everywhere. And it's sad because Seattle is a beautiful, beautiful city with so much potential, a lot of money, and you just want to see it live up to what it can be. Now, Seattle has a new mayor as of a couple days ago, Bruce Harrell. He's a former Seattle City Council president. And he gave a speech when he was sworn in, which I guess I have some mixed feelings about. Bruce Harrell kind of, I think he wanted a reset and to say, look, let's put all the negativity about Seattle aside. Let's stop saying Seattle is dying. And for those who don't live here, there was a documentary done by a local news outlet, Como 4 News, that was called Seattle is Dying. It was wildly popular, and it looked at the decline of the city. And, you know, it remains a controversial topic, but now everybody says Seattle is dying. It's kind of become a term. He wants us just to stop with that and just to move forward in a positive way.
So under our administration, Seattle will be thriving. Let me repeat that, media. Seattle will be thriving. No more talk of this dying narrative. We will be a city renewed with optimism, a city that treats all people with dignity and appreciates the richness and diversity of our voices, the perspectives of all communities.
And look, I'll say what I said the day that Bruce Harrell became mayor, and that's that all of us should hope and want him to succeed. And I think everyone should start off on his team. We should all be today Team Bruce Harrell. Team Bruce Harrell, because we all have an investment in the success of the city. And so we have an investment in the success of the mayor until he proves that he's not up to the job, if that ever happens. I feel like we should all start off on his team and we should have hopes for the city and for his success. Now, that being said, as journalists and in the media, having a positive attitude about the direction of the city doesn't wash away everything that's happened for the past decade. And the reality is that Bruce Harrell was in city government for years and years and years before he became mayor. He was a city council president, and he was a person in a position of power at a time of incredible decline for one of America's greatest cities. And he can't just wash that away by moving from the second floor to the seventh floor. I'm sorry. I do hope he succeeds. I am, again, Team Harrell right now, but we all have to hold him accountable for the promises he made on the campaign trail and for acting reasonable. You know, Harrell positioned himself during the campaign as someone who was going to stop this practice of performative politics and that he was just going to get down to business. And I want to see that from him. And I want to see things change quickly because he's had all this time in city government to identify the problem, to think about possible solutions. He made a lot of promises on the campaign trail. And I will say one thing, you know, from candidate Bruce Harrell that was lacking for me was he spoke in generalities a lot. You know, generalities is fine on a campaign trail. It's not so fine when you're actually in office. They won't cut it. So I do hope to see some meaningful action from the mayor and to see that very quickly. But wish him the best. Team Harrell for now and hopefully forever, because if he turns the city around, you know, we'll celebrate that for sure. All right, I want to end today with a note about the one-year mark from the January 6th insurrection. I know I have a lot of listeners who are on the right. I have listeners to this podcast who still support Donald Trump. I feel as if I've always been very clear about how I feel about the former president. I never voted for him. His personal shortcomings for me are too great to look past. You know, there might be some policy things he did that I could get behind, but that doesn't mean I talk down to Trump supporters or treat them as less than, unless, of course, they stormed the U.S. Capitol. You know, this is a moment where I hope that we can all come around to the reality of how serious that day was, how serious the intent of that riot was. I have always prided myself on being consistent. I have been consistent in my coverage of other riots across the country. Certainly, you guys saw my coverage of the riots in Seattle in 2020. I have always looked at actions before affiliations. And just as I did with any other riots across the country, I have been vocal in the fact that I see the January 6th insurrection for what it was. It is a stain on our country and on our democracy. And I look at those rioters no different than I look at the rioters who were lighting police cars on fire at the corner of Fifth and Pine. To me, they are cut from the same cloth. They are extremists. And that is everything that I oppose. Undivided is political coverage for the anti-fringe. And whether it's the far right or the far left, I believe that this country can be saved when we start judging actions before we consider someone's affiliation. I will repeat that line a million times because I really do believe that it is the key to getting this country back on the right track. Thank you so much for joining us on the Undivided podcast. As I said, I'll give you the scoop on the free state of Florida when I get back on Monday. And don't miss the Undivided digital show on Sunday. You can watch more of my interview with Julie Anderson, a nonpartisan candidate for Washington's Secretary of State. As I do every week on the podcast, I want to take the time to thank one of my Undivided subscribers. I cannot do this podcast or the show without their support, and so I'm just so grateful for them. Today, I want to thank Tim Jenkins. He lives all the way over in Leavenworth. Love Leavenworth. Love it over there. I asked him why he was an Undivided subscriber and if I could share that. He said, like you, I've not been happy with what I've seen from the news media for some time. I appreciate the balanced approach you take to exploring issues, as well as your old school interviewing techniques. There aren't many like you, so I jumped at the chance to support someone doing things the right way. Tim is also, by the way, president of Kolchak, a private investment company, and he says he listens to the podcast as he operates his tractor and snowblower. I guess there's been lots of snow over there. And I wish I had a snowblower because that would come in very, very handy. So Tim Jenkins, thank you so much for being an Undivided subscriber. Could not do this without people like you. The Undivided podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Until next time, thank you for helping me give common sense a comeback.